If you are listening to this podcast on your commute into work this morning, first of all, thanks. Second of all, if that commute happens to be from your bed to your desk in the room next door, then we hope you're not lonely. And we're here to provide some of the things that you don't get when you work from home. Hey, colleague, how's it going?
Hey, Jordan. Good. How are you?
Great. What'd you get up to this weekend?
Oh, not much.
Me neither. Mondays, am I right? It sounds dumb, right? It's perfunctory. It's the stuff you think that you definitely wouldn't miss if you could somehow avoid the office. But it turns out that we need these little interactions, however trite they seem. You might not feel like it when you're sloshing into work on a Monday morning, but you are at heart a social creature, and going all day without talking to anyone has consequences. So naturally, of course, our culture is making that more difficult. As freelancers and telecommuters make up a growing portion of the workforce, we're asking, what is a work-from-homer supposed to do? And what are companies doing about this now that we are actually learning about the effects of workplace loneliness? Is there a happy medium between the obvious perks of leaving the office behind and the basic but necessary emotional connection that your colleagues provide? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Erica Lenti is a freelance writer who wrote this story for Pivot, who has also written for The Walrus and The Globe and Mail and many other publications. Erica, thanks for leaving your home office to come talk to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what is workplace loneliness?
I mean, it's defined in many different ways. The way that I've sort of found it in my research is when you are working remotely, which is happening much more frequently these days, and in doing so, you're just missing that social connection, that social engagement with people in the workplace. So you're alone in your home office, which I am these days. And, you know, you're emailing people and you're G-chatting people, but you're not seeing them face to face. And you're sort of spending your 8 to 10 hours of work time alone in your little office. And that can kind of take a drain on you. That can affect the way that you're feeling emotionally and physically, that we're not really considering as much as I think maybe we should be these days.
What does some of the research say about the number of people working from home?
Yeah, so there's a StatsCan report from 2010, and that's the most recent data. I'm sure that these numbers have probably grown. 1.7 million Canadians are working from home at least part of the time. And that data found that was just people who were working from home employed by other companies or other employers. That didn't include people who are self-employed.
Okay. So not freelancers.
Yeah, exactly, which is what I am.
Which is like 3/4 of the median.
Exactly. So I think those numbers, not only are they probably underreported because of that element, but I also think that given that we're in 2018, it's been 8 years since the data has been collected, that number has probably grown quite a bit, given all of the new technologies that we have and the research into the benefits of working from home and slashing that commute into nothing.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is it kind of sounds, on the surface, like a dream, right? And you hear people say it that way when they finally leave the office and they get to work from home, that I don't even have to wear pants, or I saved my entire commute time, or et cetera, et cetera. I don't have to eat lunch in the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to quash those benefits in any way because they are great. I mean, as someone who works from home, I get to hang out with my dog all day. I have a one-eyed rescue dog, and she is like the best ever. And she is like a total lap dog. And so I get to sit there and work while my dog's in my lap. And I'm like, this is the best thing ever. There are definitely tons of benefits. I can appreciate not having to commute in Toronto, but we don't often think about, those like the lack of social engagement and what that does to you.
What does it do to you?
So I can tell you personally, I've been working from home for about a month now, and I find myself starved for social engagement. When I interviewed a woman for the story that first came up, in which this issue first came up, she was an accountant. She was working long days in her basement office during tax season. That was 80-hour weeks. She really enjoyed kind of being out of the office and away from the office politics. But then she was like, I'm not really engaging with anybody during the day when I'm just huddled in my basement office doing whatever it is that she was doing. And then, you know, when the air conditioner broke down or like her refrigerator wasn't working properly, she'd call a repair person and she would just be chatting with them for hours because she really just wanted to engage with somebody. And I'm finding myself kind of doing the same thing. At first when I heard it, I was like, this is a little weird. You know, maybe she's over exaggerating it a little bit. But then I would like go to Shoppers Drug Mart and find myself talking to like the cashier for longer than, you know, maybe socially appropriate.
That's why you came in here so quickly when we asked you. Like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
It really does affect your social engagement. And then there's also some stats that some researchers have put together. The one that sort of struck me most was that being lonely could be killing you faster. The one researcher found that those experiencing loneliness had a 26% higher chance of dying premature deaths.
Wow.
So it really does take a toll, not just on like your everyday, but on your physical and emotional health as well.
I feel like on one hand, we kind of understand that because we talk a lot about like the isolation of elderly people who don't have family and who still kind of live alone and what that does to them and how hard it is. But then we have a whole like, I really hate using like millennials all do this kind of thing. But we have this whole class of new worker who by and large are self-employed and a lot of them work from home. Mm-hmm. And we don't seem to consider it with them. We just seem to say, well, I mean, it sucks that you don't have regular work, but that's a perk.
Yeah, and we're not really considering that there are longer work hours for a lot of young people who are willing to take on, you know, jobs that can be more precarious. If you're freelancing like me, it means you never really have a regular schedule.
You can't stop answering emails at 5 p.m.
Exactly, because if there's someone I need to interview and they're available at 6 p.m., I'm not going to say, well, that doesn't work in my schedule. I need to get a story done by a deadline and I need to do it when I can do it. And I never have yet like a regular 9-to-5 work day. I'm constantly on emails, which there's tons of research around how that's not great for you either. When you wake up and check your phone and see all of your emails, and then the last thing you do before you go to bed is check your emails again. Not healthy.
You're not supposed to have your phone in the bedroom. I literally was lectured on this morning.
Yes, it's really bad. And I notice that when I wake up in the morning, sometimes my partner and I are just like awake on our phones looking at emails. She also works in media. So we're just both in this world of checking our emails when we get up to see what's happening and then being like, hey, how did you sleep? After we've checked all of our emails. We're also seeing, you know, lots of people working in like co-working spaces, which I think some people say is a bit of a like an improvement and allows you to be more social. But I would say most people are not actually engaging with one another.
Yeah.
You know, walk into a Starbucks anywhere if you want to consider that sort of a co-working space.
It definitely is now.
Yeah.
Everybody has their laptops. That's where people work during the
day. People have their headphones on. They're not talking to anyone else. So even when we have those settings that are supposed to be more social and more engaging, we're not really using them.
What about the perspective from companies? So setting aside freelancers, companies at least in recent years had kind of a trend of allowing workers to telecommute to save more time so that they're not starting their day an hour later because they're driving through traffic. What are the upsides and downsides now to companies letting people work from home?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely a lot of benefits to it. I mean, from a company's perspective, you're saving on overhead if you've got a remote worker. You know, there's no commute time for the worker. You know, you can hire talent from anywhere in the world basically to do stuff. But it's interesting you bring this up. In 2017, IBM was doing this, and then they realized that their workers weren't performing to the best of their abilities being alone. And so they decided to send all of their remote workers back into the office. And I know that Google and Apple and a bunch of other pretty big tech companies also just don't allow their workers to work remotely because they find that it impedes on their work abilities. So it does have its perks, but a lot of companies are seeing that the sort of traditional workspace in which people are interacting with one another on a daily basis is what works best for their companies.
Some of those interactions, too, seem so superficial that it seems amazing to think that they actually have, you know, something that we need in them, right? Like, you know, no offense to any of my coworkers, but, you know, like, you know the typical work relationship I'm talking about. You pass somebody in the hallway and you say, hey, how's it going? And everybody says fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of move on with our day. And that's somehow important to our sense of well-being.
It must say something about, I guess, our human nature and the meaning of interaction amongst us, that just seeing faces, just having those brief conversations, they do have some sort of meaning to us. And I mean, I don't have the research on hand, but I can say anecdotally, even when I feel like the person probably doesn't really care about my answer to how are you, to me, it's a small gesture that makes me feel kind of good. I'm like, oh, so-and-so said hey to me today. That was really polite and nice of them, even if it's, yeah, if it's superficial. And I don't get that anymore. I maybe get it a little bit with my concierge at my apartment building right. and my neighbors that I see very infrequently.
And your dog's happy to see you.
My dog is always happy to see me, so I don't take that too personally. She's pretty happy to see anyone she likes, so I don't take that too personally. But I do find myself kind of missing those hallway engagements and what they bring, even if it's really, really small.
Is there any research or anything being done around the sort of not in-person but social workplace programs like the Slacks and you mentioned GChat? Like, do those produce the same thing?
I don't have the research on hand for that, but I do know that from what I learned about remote workers, that it's really the face-to-face engagements and interactions that make a difference. So, you know, if you're chatting on Slack, it's, you know, they say that Slack is like a replacement for email, but it really is kind of the same idea. It's like an IM that you're just sort of messaging back and forth about. I do wonder, and I don't have the answer for this, if things like Skype or FaceTime in which you see the person makes a huge difference, because it is a bit more intimate. It is a bit more personal. You know, you're able to gauge how the person is reacting to what you're saying. And it has a bit more of that genuine face-to-face sort of conversation-like feel, though obviously it is still you staring at a screen and talking to your computer.
But if you're going to do that and somebody else is going to see you and you're working from home, you probably change out of your pajamas and you probably, like, do your hair a little bit. And
certainly. I will say that I am very anti-pajama working at home. Like, you cannot get anything done if you're in your pajamas. You've got to put yourself into a mindset where you're like, I am going to get dressed and I'm going to brush my teeth and do my hair the way that I would if I was going to work, and then I'm going to sit at my desk. You know, might not wear the nicest clothes in my closet, but I'm still going to get dressed. And it speaks to that woman, the accountant who I spoke to for the article on this. And she found that what really made a difference for her was having a routine. So she would do the same thing. You know, she would have breakfast, get dressed, go to her office, take breaks in between. So it felt more like a traditional workplace. And she would always make a point to try to, like, go out every once in a while to the grocery store and have those, like, small, maybe they seem meaningless, but they weren't to her interactions. And I think that started to make a difference for her. And she was finding it was all sort of about balance and finding how she could balance doing her work alone in her basement office and getting out in the world and hanging out with people and talking with people.
Are there any efforts underway to sort of provide something like that for the growing number of people who are working from home?
Yeah, I think that companies are trying to figure out how to maintain that balance. There's a company in Michigan called Steelcase that decided to, like, redesign their offices and make part of it open concept, which is, you know, that's a big trend these days, like tearing down the cubicle walls and having everyone sit at, like, communal benches. But that doesn't always work for everybody. So they were creating these larger sort of communal spaces, but also had these walled off quiet spaces where people could go and be alone if they needed to. And it was in finding that balance between alone time and then, okay, I'm going to come hang out with my coworkers time, that they found their employees worked best. And I think that's probably, like, the direction that we should be going in. You know, a lot of new companies, a lot of, like, tech companies, a lot of startups are trying to do that sort of open concept, like, pool table in the middle of the office kind of setup.
Are there any places, any resources for people who are stuck working from home to share their experiences?
Yeah, there's this interesting project. I believe it's Toronto-based. It's called the Loneliness Project, and it's basically just encouraging people to open up about it so that loneliness is not so much of a stigma. I think that often people who work from home, and I would be part of this cohort, have a tough time admitting that it can be kind of lonely and it can be kind of isolating because, you know, we've talked about all of those perks and people will be like, why are you complaining about
it? Yeah, you don't have to listen to the person next to you chew their food at lunchtime.
Exactly. But, you know, there is still that issue there. And the Loneliness Project essentially just gets people to open up about loneliness, how they're feeling, why they're feeling isolated. They curate all of these stories so that you can see that you're really not alone. And I think that's a really lovely feeling for people. I think it would be really cool, though, if there was some sort of in-person Like, I don't know if this exists yet, if there was like a freelancer meetup, if there was like a work from home meetup where like once a month people go and they grab food and some beers and chat about things and get to have that interaction in person. That would be pretty awesome. I would love to be part of one of those groups. If you know if it exists, please contact me.
You might have to start it.
Maybe I'll have to start it. We'll see.
Thanks, Erica.
Thanks so much.
Erica Lenti, freelance writer, owner of a cute dog who she talks to all day probably, expert on workplace loneliness firsthand. That was The Big Story. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You know the drill. Everything you need is there. You can find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And of course, you can find us anywhere you get podcasts. That's Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Podbox, Podbean, Castbox. I made one of those up. We're on all the rest. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.